This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Greek Sedra, we're introduced to Abraham for the first time. And we're simply told that Terach was 70 years old and he gave birth to Abraham, to Nahor, and to Haran. These are the generations of Terach. Terach gave birth to Abraham, to Nahor, and to Haran, and Haran gave birth to Lot. And Haran died in the face of Terach, his father, in the land of his birth, in Ur Kasdim. And Avram and Nahor married wives. Avram married Sarai, and Nahor married Milcah, who was his niece. And Sarai was barren, she didn't have any children. And Terach took Avraham, his son, and Lot, his nephew, and Sarai, his daughter-in-law. And they went from Ur Kasdim towards the land of Canaan, and they went as far as Haran, and they stopped there. And Terach lived for 250 years, and Terach died in Haran. That's all that we're told. So at that point, it's just that we know so much about Abraham later on, but if we're reading the Torah for the first time, Abraham could be like one of the other tens of names that have been mentioned in the two Sedras this far, of people who came and went. There's no special mention at all of the background of Abraham, of some of the history of Abraham, of who Abraham was. Then all of a sudden, the next Sedra, to this morning Sedra, by Yomer Hashem el Avram, Lech lechol mi'artzuchol mi'miladetuchol mi'beis avichol. Get up and go from your land, the land of your birth, your land, the land of your birth, from the house of your father, el ha'oretz asher aleka, to the land which I will show you. And then wonderful promises, I'll make you into a great nation. Ba'avorechecho, and I shall bless you. Ba'agad lo shemecho, and I'll make your name great. Ve'heyeh brocha, and you will be a brocha. Ba'avorcho mevorechecho, and those who bless you will be blessed. And mekalelecho o'or, and those who curse you will be cursed. And all the families of the earth will be blessed through you. Why did he pick on Avram for all this? What did Avram do to merit this special treatment? In the case of Noach, before Noach is singled out as being worthy of salvation, we're told a little bit of why he deserves it. The Sedra last week started off telling us that Eli told us Noach ish tzaddik, tomi mayobadur yisav. Noach was a tzaddik and a perfect man in his generation. Esa Elohim Yisalech Noach. Noach walked with the Ribbono Shel Olam. So then I understand a little bit why Noach was chosen to be saved, why Noach was chosen for the ark and was ultimately given the role in history which he was in fact given. There's a bit of background, we understand. Noach was an ish tzaddik, a tomim, he was a perfect and a very special man. But I've learned nothing. Just as Terach had some children, one of them was Avram, and Avram had a wife and her name was Sarai, and she had no children, and then the whole family got away. Haran died, his brother, and then the whole family picked off and they started going to Israel, and they stopped off halfway, and they lived in the country in which they stopped off, and that's the end of the story. Why is God picking on Avram all of a sudden and establishing him as something very special? Question number one. Question number two. Noach is referred to right at the very beginning as an ish tzaddik tomim, as a tzaddik and a righteous person. Avram only gets that description very late on in his life. I mean, when the Sedra opens, Avram is already an elderly man. And it's in his 90s when he's told, in fact he's over 90, he's nearly 100 when he's given the bris milah, that God says to him, Hishalech lefonai veheyeh tomim, walk before me and be perfect. It's at that point that God elevates him to the level that Noach starts off at. Noach starts off as an ish tzaddik tomim. Here at the point of the bris milah, that's when the Ribbono Shel Olam tells Avram, walk before me veheyeh tomim, and be perfect. So it seems that it took Avram a much longer time to get to where Noach started off. One of the strangest things of all is, where does it mention the first time that Avram prayed to the Ribbono Shel Olam? Now Avram has been through some rough experiences in his life. He's been thrown into a furnace, he's had no children, nor was his wife, he's had some problems, that he ran from one country to another, he's been emigrating and immigrating, He's had to run from the country in which he is because of famine. He's had a rough time. When is mentioned the first time that he davened? Can you think of it? When is the first time that Avraham davened? Sorry? When does it say Vayispalel Avraham and Avraham prayed? Avimelech was the first time. Next week, Sedra, right at the end of his lifetime. But he's well over 100 years time. He's well over 100 years old. And in his dealings with Avimelech, you remember that right, Avimelech gets ill because he started tampering with Sarai's wife, right? That's the story there, yeah? And Avimelech apologizes. He didn't realize that Sarai was Avraham's wife. And God says, well, get Avraham to pray for you and it'll be alright. And then it says, Vayispalel Avraham, and Avraham prayed to the Ribono Shel Olam for Avimelech. That's the first time it mentions in the Torah that Avraham Avinu prayed to the Ribono Shel Olam. That's an amazing thing. But through all this tzoras, through all this tremendous suffering which Avraham went through and all these problems, not once does it mention that he turned to the Ribono Shel Olam in prayer. What's going on? With Yaakov, when does it say, when is the first time he prayed? He's a young man, he was running away from home, the first time he had tzoras. He prays to the Ribono Shel Olam and he says the 10% of everything he gets he'll give to the Ribono Shel Olam. Yitzchak prays to the Ribono Shel Olam, Vayetze Yitzchak Lasuach Basodeh. And many times, all the other others prayed many times to the Ribono Shel Olam. Come, ladies and gentlemen, come closer forward. The chairs here, you can come in. It is also strange that it should be such a long time before it's recorded that Avraham prayed to the Ribono Shel Olam. The Medrash can't help but draw comparisons between Avraham and Noach. I think what's worrying the Medrash mainly is, why is Avraham considered the first Jew? And why was Noach less Jewish than Avraham? What does Avraham have that Noach didn't have? They both communicated with the Ribono Shel Olam. They were both monotheistic. They both preached monotheism in their time. They were both unpopular for preaching monotheism. Yeah, so why didn't God give Brit Milah to Noach? Why did he choose Avraham? So the Medrash says in last week's Sedra, Eto Elokim Mishalech Noach. Noach walked with God. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemia. Rabbi Yehuda Omar. Rabbi Yehuda says this can be compared. Moshal LeMelech Shoyu LeShnei Bonim. Imagine a king with two sons. Echod Gadol veEchod Katan. One is a big, is an older one. One's a little one. Omar LeKatan Holach Imi. He says to the little one, come walk with me. And he says to the elder son, walk in front of me. So the king is walking down the red carpet there, with people on either side in a big procession. So he says to the son, come walk ahead, you lead the way. And he says to the little boy, come hold my hand. So who's closer to the king? The bigger boy, really. The one that the king says, come, you lead the way. It in fact has more of the trust of the king than the little boy whose hand he holds. Kach Avraham, Shaya Koyche Yofe, in the same way Avraham, whose power was beautiful, he had strength. Hishalech lefonai veheye tomim. In today's said that is, walk before me and be perfect. Aval Noach Shaya Koyach Ra, but Noach, whose strength was inadequate, Eshay Elokim Hishalech Noach. Noach walked with God. So the Medrash already sees a slight flaw in Noach by mentioning it in the sense of Eshay Elokim Hishalech Noach. He walked with God rather than he walked before God. Avraham, it says, he walked before God, independently. And Noach walked next to God. Rabbi Nechemya goes a step further, and it's quite shocking what Rabbi Nechemya says. Moshal le'oyavo shel melech. Imagine a friend of the king. She'oyo mishtakea batit ava. And he was walking through mud. And he was sinking into this mud. Heitzit ha'melech v'roi. So the king saw that this man was going to fall into the mud. Omele, he said to him, ad she'ata mishtakea batit helechimi. Be careful here. Before you fall into the mud, just walk next to me. Come, hold my hand. I'll help you here. That's the one kind of a man. That's what it means when God says that Noach walked with God. God had to hold Noach's hand in order to prevent him falling in the mud. What's Avraham compared to? The other way around. Yet the friend sees the king groping in the dark. hates its av v'hitchil meir alav derech achalun. So the friend is looking out of the window and he sees the king groping in the dark. So he takes out his torch and he points it out of the window and it makes light in front of the king. Hates its amelech v'ro. So the king looks up to see where the light's coming and he sees his friend up at the window making light. Omele sisti matshato meili derech achalun. Instead of passing the light through the window, bo v'hayilafonai, come walk with me and you can put the light, the torch, right in front of me. Which again would be a great honor. The man is invited to walk with the king. Kachom HaKadosh Baruch Hu Avrom, in the same way God said to Avrom, Ad she'ata me'ili b'Mesopotamia, u'michavroseos, while you're busy making light in Mesopotamia there for me, bo v'hayilafonai b'Eretz Yisrael, come and make a bit of light in Eretz Yisrael. You're doing very nicely in Mesopotamia, but come a bit closer to me. If you want to make light, if you want to teach monotheism, come and teach it in Eretz Yisrael, not in Mesopotamia. What's shocking about the Medrash is the implication, and more than an implication, that were it not for the Siyata Dishmaya, were it not for the fact that God, so to say, was holding the hand of Noach, Noach would have dropped to the lowest levels of his generation. He would have sunk right into the mat. Avroim was independent. Not only was Avroim independent, he helped the king. It was the king who was groping around. The Ribbono Shel'olam was groping around in the dark because people weren't recognizing him. And it was Avroim who helped God out of the mess. But in the case of Noach, it was God who helped Noach out of the mess. And Noach would have sunken right into that mud and would have been washed away with the flood together with everybody else if it weren't for the Ribbono Shel'olam holding his hand. That's an amazing thing. We talked a little bit last week about the fall of Noach, how suddenly he fell and how low he fell. But one sees here that even he wouldn't have even have held up as long as he did if it weren't for the Ribbono Shel'olam. And Noach would have dropped right to the same depths as well. There's tremendous contrast between the characters of Noach and the character of and that of Avrom, and it's that contrast that the Midrash battles with to try and put its finger on why Avrom is the first Jew. The key Midrash is the Midrash on which the Sedra opens.
Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Moshal le'echod shehoya oiver mimokun lemokun.
This is on the first words of the Sedra, Lech lecho mi'atzecha. Can be compared to a man who is walking from place to place. Already we see an implication of something which we can't put our fingers on, but there's something strange. Lech lecho means go. And Rabbi Yitzchak says it's compared to a man who is going from place to place. V'ro'o biro achas do'lekes. And he saw a building on fire.
Omar, he says,
Tomash Abira Azu Beloy Manig, is it possible that this building has no master? Nobody owns it. This medrash reminds me of a situation which I once found myself in. As a student, I once bought myself a ticket from London to Paris by aeroplane. The ticket cost me £4. It wasn't in 1929 or something like that when £4 was a lot of money. It was just a few years ago when £4 wasn't a lot of money. It cost £4 from London to Paris. No, what yeshiva bocher wouldn't go to Paris for £4? There's no question about it. So I went. Sitting on the first seat, the plane was a comet. No, all right. Sitting on the comet and had nothing to do, so I started reading the ticket. It was a charter flight, of course, and the ticket started off saying, we do not guarantee to get any passenger to his destination. We do not, a whole, and so it started going, a whole lot of we do not guarantee. No, I convinced myself finally that for £4, what can you expect? You can't expect to be guaranteed to be gotten to your destination. We have the right to drop our passengers anywhere we choose. We have the right. It's unbelievable what they had the rights to do and what the passenger had no rights to do. And it was too late to get off the plane or anything, so I said, Tfilas HaDerech with extra kavana, and off we went. And everything went fine. The plane took off and the plane landed just like a big rail plane that cost a lot more than £4. They didn't serve tea, but that was all. Get off the plane, and of course, my luggage is nowhere to be found. So I start asking around, where's my luggage? Everybody says, don't ask me. Those that I could find that spoke English. And there's a place there that's for luggage inquiries, and I went to them, and they don't know. I said, well, who do I go to find out? What do I do? They said, well, go to whoever organized the flight. So I said, it's British Airways. It's a British Airways plane. They said, then go to British Airways. So I go to British Airways. I say, my suitcase, please. They said, what flight did you come on? told them which flight. They said, no, that's not ours. I said, but it's your plane. They said, no, it's somebody chartered it. I said, who? They don't know. Nobody knows. Went to the airport officials, went to the inquiry, everywhere. Nobody knew who it was. Eventually I got hold of the British Airways man. I said, I want to know. If I walk into that plane now and I get into the cockpit and I fly it off, who'll come running after me? That's the guy I want to speak to. The one who'll come running after me. Avraham Avinu is looking at a building on fire. Moshal, it's compared to a man who's looking at a building on fire. Nobody's doing anything about it. And he says, cat. So he says, is it possible that nobody owns the place? At that point, that's the point that somebody hates it, Salav Bala Biro. At that point, the caretaker puts his head out of the window. I own the place. So when Avraham Avinu looks around the world and he says, will you say that this world has no leader? Hates it, Salav HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Then the Ribbono Shel Olam peeked out the Omale and he said, Anihu Baal HaOlam. I'm the Balabos of this world. I own the place. What the Medrash is telling us is primarily that this Vayomer Hashem El Avraham Lech Lecha Me'atzecha, this Nevuah, this prophecy with which Avraham was hit, was not out of the blue. This was not something that all of a sudden God decided to speak to somebody and could find somebody no better than Avraham Avinu. This was in response to the searching of Avraham Avinu. And it was only at the point that Avraham Avinu turned around and said, it's impossible that there's no Ribbono Shel Olam. At that point God said, Lech Lecha. Now it's time for you to go. If you've realized that, it's time for you to move on. So one has to understand that this Lech Lecha Me'atzecha is the consequence of years and years of searching on the part of Avraham before the Ribbono Shel Olam responds with the instruction of Lech Lecha Me'atzecha Mimoladecha. What's interesting is the process of the searching and the process of Avraham's discovery. The Akedah suggests, he outlines in fact roughly the progress, and he suggests the following. He says Avraham started off and all that he realized was that there must be a Balabiro, there must be a Balabos around. The world can't be without a Balabos. It was on that he was challenged by the Ovdei Avodah Zarah. That was the main source of the challenge. We learnt in the later shiur this morning in a completely different context that one of the difficulties with Hashgacha Pratis, the difficulties in understanding that there's a God who cares about every individual and prescribes a course for every individual, is the inconsistency of people's lives. 1 minute they're up, 1 minute they're down, 1 minute they're rich, 1 minute they're poor, 1 minute they're powerful, 1 minute they've lost their power. And the difficulty that one has with Hashgacha, if the Ribbono Shel Olam is running the world, why isn't he consistent? If he wants X to be powerful, give him power and let him keep it. And if he wants Y to be poor, let him be poor and let him keep it. And if he wants whatever it is, so if he wants somebody to be healthy, let him make them healthy and stay healthy. Why this up and down all the time? Avraham hadn't started the whole principle of understanding a Ribbono Shel Olam and a Torah and mitzvahs and all that kind of thing yet. All he knew was that there must be a Baal Habir. On that he was challenged by the Apikursim of the time, by the Avodah Zarah of the time, including his own family, Terach, and his brothers. And they decided eventually, as I think I told you last year, after Avraham proved to be not a very good businessman in the idol shop, because he used to before he broke them even, he used to give the customers quite a rough time. When a customer came in to buy an idol, he didn't refuse to sell one to them, and he didn't advise them against it. He used to sell them the idol, and he used to take the money. And as they were running, walking out of the shop, very happy with their new idol, Avraham would say, by the way, how old are you? And the man would say, 60. That's rather peculiar. A 60-year-old praying to a one-day-old. We only made him yesterday, that idol. And suddenly the 60-year-old would realize that is taka, a bit peculiar, and would return the idol. And so he would go, and the shop wasn't doing too well, as you can imagine. And eventually they decided that was no good. And particularly the story of the breaking of the idols, when a lady came along and said, look, give some flour here. Let the idols eat a bit. They must be hungry. So when the lady left the shop, he smashed all the idols and put the axe in the hand of the big one. The father came in and said, what have you done here? He said, I did nothing. A lady came in and brought some flour, and they started fighting over who will get the flour. So this big strong one over here took the axe and he smashed everybody. So Terah said, don't talk nonsense. You know they can't do that kind of thing. He says, oh, if they can't do that kind of thing, what are you praying to them for? At that point, the brothers realized that they'll never make a businessman out of Avram, and they sent him off to serve in the temple of idolatry, so maybe there you'll be able to learn to appreciate the finesse of idolatry. And one thing led to another. Eventually they put him over to Nimrod, and Nimrod called him in and said, what's going on here? I'm the balabos of this world, and what are you questioning? That was the whole to do backwards and forwards, leading ultimately to Nimrod throwing him into the fire. Haran was watching all this, Avram's brother, and decided, we'll see. If Avram comes out of this alive and they ask me, who do you support? I'll say, I support Avram. If Avram comes out of it dead and they ask me who I support, I'll tell them I support Nimrod. Avram was thrown into the furnace. Why did he agree to go to the furnace as the Akedah? Not because he believed in the Ribbono Shel Olam. He wasn't there yet. There's no suggestion that in the previous parasha, Avram was already Avram. There's no suggestion of it at all. The first time that Avram starts relating to God or vice versa is in today's parasha, in the Lech Lecha episode. Therefore says the Akedah, at that point he was being Moser Nefesh for Emes, that's all, for what he believed was true. And one thing he knew for sure, that what Nimrod was saying was false. That fire is a god, that's out. That the sun is a god, that's out. That there is no god, that's out. And for that he's going to give his life. That's an incredible midah. This is not a religious belief. This is being prepared to give one's life for truth. And that really should be the basis of all Yiddishkeit. Because it doesn't start without that. To be prepared to be dishonest, never mind not give one's life for truth. To be prepared to be dishonest and yet to carry out and to practice Torah, what's it all about? To be prepared or to be unprepared to stand up for truth. To lose a job for truth. To lose a bit of money for truth. To lose a lot for truth. To be unprepared to do that and to carry on being a Jew is very difficult. Because long before Avraham Avinu was a Jew, he was Moser Nefesh for Emes, for that which he believed was right. Not, it was no religious belief at all, just as a philosopher. He believed that the philosophy of Nimrod was wrong. Nimrod, you can't tolerate that and you want to throw me into the fire? Throw me into the fire, but I can't live with a false philosophy. So God saves him and he walks out of the fire. They then turned to Haran, of course, and said, now who do you believe in, young man? And they said, oh, I'm with Avraham. I said, well, you try the same trick. Let's throw you into the fire too. He said, sure, throw me in. And of course, he got burnt up pretty quickly. And that's why it reported at the end of the previous Sedra that Haran died in the face of Terach, meaning it was through Terach, because Terach handed Avram over to Nimrod, that the whole thing occurred. What's important, though, according to Akedah, is that at that point he still didn't conceive of the Ribbono Shel Olam as he did at a later stage. He merely knew that there must be a balabos to the world. And at that point, he wasn't even sure after coming out of the furnace alive. What's he battling with? He's battling with Hashgacha Pratit. It's all very well. The first stage of belief is to believe that there's a balabos in the world. Somebody made the world and somebody owns the place. That's the first thing. Now, if somebody walks into your house, you like them to appreciate that there's a balabos there. You don't like it if somebody walks into your house and takes over the place. And walks into the kitchen and starts cooking. And helps himself and sits down at the dining room table. It's not even meal time. He's sitting down there, he's eating. Just ignores you totally. And then he changes into his swimming costume and he jumps into your swimming pool. Hasn't even said good morning to you yet. That's not a nice feeling. You throw such a guy out. The first thing you want him to recognize is the balabos here. You want to come in, you can come in. But you knock at the door and you say hello. And you say, may I have a swim or may I have something to eat? You don't walk around here as if you own the place. That's number one. But number two is to realize that the balabos is mashgiach. That the balabos cares. That the balabos directs. That the balabos knows what's going on. At the point that Avram came out of the furnace, says the Akedah, he still wasn't sure of Hashgacha Pratit. So you'll ask, but he saw he was saved miraculously. Well, Avram thought at that stage, maybe I was saved miraculously because I gave my life on the very question of the existence of God. Then God supports his people. Then God will do miracles for people. If you're being Moser Nefesh on the Metzius of the Ribbono Shel Olam, if you're fighting falsehood in the world, and you're fighting atheism in support of monotheism, then God will save you. But does that mean that God's worried about what I do the rest of the time? Is he watching me every minute of the day? Is he going to help me in all the little things I do as well? Of that he wasn't yet sure. In fact, says the Akedah, at the beginning of the Seder, God says to him, go from your land. What does it say afterwards? Vayelech Avram kasher diber elav Hashem. And Avram went as God told him to go. But, says the Akedah, he didn't carry out the instruction in full, because he took Lot with him, and the instruction was, leave your family behind, go by yourself. So already it's considered, the Akedah says, that wasn't altogether right. And you see that God is, that Avram is not yet 100% with God. He's 75 years old at that time. And it says he took all his property and everything, which also seems a little bit strange, and off he goes. It's much later on, says the Akedah, that for the first time, things start happening. It's with the war of the four kings and the five kings. Okay, now he's not giving his life for God. What is he being most nefesh for now? Not even for emes. He's being most nefesh for midas now. Just for refinement. Because somebody is being unjustly oppressed, and he goes out to fight the battle of that person who's being unjustly oppressed. That's what Avram goes. And he goes to smash the five kings. After that, God says to him, Al tira Avram, don't worry Avram, Anoichi magen loch, I am your protector. And you'll get tremendous reward for this action that you've just done. In other words, at this point he tells Avram, it's not only when you jump into a fire for me that I care, even when you do something for other people. If what you do is good and right and moral, you must know that I'm with you. I'm supporting you, I'm protecting you. And you'll get tremendous chayr, you'll get tremendous reward for what you did, even though it had no philosophic content. And it had no religious content. It was just a right thing to do. And for that I'm with you. That's the first time since the Akedah that Avraham starts to realize that the Ribbono Shel responds to everything, not just to great actions of Mesilas Nefesh for Kiddush Hashem. Then he takes Avraham outside and he says, have a look at the stars. Why does he do that? Says the Medrash, and Rashi quotes it. Get away from your astrology. Says the Akedah, until this point, Avram's whole belief was still a little bit flawed in that it was mixed with astrological beliefs. And Avram found it difficult to believe that he was going to have children because astrologically that didn't make sense. At kedei kach, but even as great as Avram was, he was so affected by his environment, even at this stage, that there's still a touch, a little bit, of astrology that makes him find it difficult to believe that he's really going to have a child. And God says, come Avram, get away from it all. Understand what works here and who decides here, and leave your astrology alone. Then you have the whole Brit Bein Abitorim. And he tells him when he was 99 years old, Hishalech lefonai veheyetonim, go before me and be perfect. By the way, just before that, at the end, when God tells him to leave his astrology alone, it says, Vehemin ba'ashem, at that point Avram believed in God, vayechshevei lo tzedakah, and it was considered an act of righteousness for Avram. Says the Akedah, that's the turning point in Avram's career. It's at that point, he's old now, at that point that Avram, vehemin ba'ashem, that Avram's belief in the Ribbono Shel Olam is complete. Obviously his belief at the earlier stages was tremendous. There's no way we can understand and can conceive of it, but to reach the heights of total and absolute belief, that he hadn't yet reached. Says the Akedah, we have two people here. We have Avram and we have Noach. Noach is referred to as an Ish Tzadik Tomim right at the beginning of his career. Avraham is virtually anonymous. We don't know anything about him when he starts off as an ordinary human being. All we know now is that the Medrash tells us that Lech Lecha was an instruction given to him in response of many years of searching. That's all we know. Says the Akedah, there are two ways of reaching Emunah. One can reach Emunah Noach's way, and one can reach Emunah Avraham's way. What was special about Noach's way is that he was taught to it. He was taught it by his parents. Lemech, the father of Noach, taught him all about the Ribbono Shel Olam. Noach didn't grow up in an environment totally foreign to Yiddishkeit. But there was a certain amount of learning that was going on. There was belief in God at the time. Even in his wicked generation, even the wicked people, it's not as if they didn't believe in God at all. They'd heard about this business. Monotheism wasn't strange to them. They just thought they could conquer it. But in Noach's own family, he was born with it. He received his emunah bekabolo. He was spoon-fed with his emunah. As a baby, he was given his emunah already. It was completely natural. It was completely normal. Avraham Avinu is a different story altogether. Avraham Avinu starts with a father who's an idol dealer, never mind an idol worshipper, and a whole family who deals in idols. Avraham starts with no background whatever in morality and no background whatever in monotheism. And he starts from scratch, right from the very beginning. That's the basic difference between Avraham and Noach. Says the Akedah, yes, it takes Avraham a long, long time. He's 90 before he's given the same degree that Noach is given. Tommy. He's 90 years old. And when did he start his search for God? We'll see in a moment. When he was a little child, he started his search for God. It's taken him 90 years before the Torah says, Harech lefonai veheye tomim. You go before me and be a tomim. Something which Noach had right from the very beginning. Noach's introduction into the scene of the Torah is as a man who was already a tomim. Where did he get it from? He was taught it. Yet who was greater? Medrash says that if God didn't continuously support Noach, he would have fallen into the mud. Whereas Avraham could stand on his own two feet. And here we have something that I think is terribly relevant to today, and I think it's terribly relevant to you, and I think it's terribly relevant to a lot of people. It's much quicker to be born into a frum Yiddishkeit. It's quicker, and it's easier. And it's more natural. And it's more normal. For a child who's born into Yiddishkeit, for your own children, for example, God is just part of the scene. He's just there. That's a normal thing. And praying to God is as natural as talking to another human being. And keeping the Torah is just a normal lifestyle. The same as you get up in the morning and you wash your hands and you do what you have to do and you put on your clothes and you go to work. Say you daven and you keep kashrus and you keep Shabbos. It's just the way you live. And there's tremendous advantage in starting with the point where a Torah life is absolutely normal. Sure, even a child who's born into it gets to an age where he starts questioning. But at least he's questioning normality. He's not questioning some new idea. He's questioning something which already for 15 years he's been taking as normal. Now he's starting to question. So he has a reasonable chance of coming out of his rebellious stage and his questioning stage healthy and straight. So he wants, okay, it's normal, but why is it normal? Why is it good? Where does it come from? By that time he's already got a bit of an intellect, he has some knowledge, he's learned a bit of Gemara, he knows Chumash, he knows Mishnah, he knows Halacha. He's got a basis with which to start questioning. The biggest danger is a man who starts questioning before he knows anything. Once you know something, question. Bavakasha, that's the greatest of pleasure. You must question once you know. But then question before you know. Avraham was in a situation where he had to start questioning before he knew anything. He had to start, his whole basis was on questioning what was their normality and what was their average situation, and he had to overthrow. Since the Akedah of Avraham reached far higher levels. But the point that I want to make is it took him a much longer time. It took him 90 years to get to the point of getting the same degree as Noach had at the beginning. True, it was a much better degree. You can have a BA from Cambridge and you can have a BA from Wits with no hard feelings toward Wits. And you can't compare the two. You can't just say, I've got a BA. It depends. Where does your BA come from? A man can have smicha and he can have smicha. You've got to find out. Who gave you the smicha? Where does it come from? There's smicha and there's smicha. And so there's Tomim and there's Tomim and there's Tzaddik and there's Tzaddik. But at least he got the degree of Tomim at 90 years old, whereas as Noach had it to start with. Although his degree of Tomim was something much greater and was something much more, something much higher. This really explains the discrepancy that we have between the Gemara and the Medrash. The Gemara in the Dorin Daf Lamed Beis says Avraham was 3 years old when he discovered the Ribbono Shel Olam. Difficult Gemara to understand altogether how a 3 year old could have done that. The Medrash, this answers your question. The Medrash says that he was 48 years old. The Rambam brings the Medrash that he was 48 years old. The man, the Rambam in fact says 40 years old, he probably had a different gears than the Gemara. And the Kesef Mishnah says there's no contradiction. What is the Gemara trying to tell us by this 3 and 48? It took him a long time. It wasn't a flash in the pan. Not like we've seen the light all of a sudden. Turned on. You don't get turned on to real things. You work and you work and you work and you work. And it took him from the age of 3, says the Kesef Mishnah. It started at 3. His first questionings, his acceptance of the concept that there must be a balabos came at 3. And it was 48 before he satisfied himself that there was really a God. That was 45 years of work for a man of the intellect of Avraham Avinu. And of the nevuah, of the prophecy of Avraham Avinu. And we think we're magicians. We can just come from a non-religious background and phew, hocus pocus, all of a sudden we've seen the light and we're frum. It doesn't work like that. To become frum is 45 years. To come from a background where there's nothing to a background, to a situation of belief, of absolute belief, is 45 years for a man of Avraham's intellect. What chance do we have to do it in there? No chance. Unless it's impossible. One of the big battles that we face with ourselves is fooling ourselves. Because that's something that guarantees stagnancy. Looking at a piece of Gemara and thinking you understand it is your biggest enemy. If you know what you don't understand, you'll go far. The moment you think you now understand it, you might as well stop learning that piece of Gemara because you're going to make no more progress. This kind of feeling, we read something, but not any Gemara, it's even the simple things. Read a book, hear somebody say, we start with the assumption that everything's superficial, that everything is easy to understand. When somebody's talking, we listen with half an ear, and we assume that we've understood it at the end of it. If one understands what goes in, you think of yourself what goes into something you say. I'm not talking when you're talking nonsense. When you say something that you mean, what is it? What kind of thought goes into it? What kind of depth of personality, of feeling, of emotion, and of intellect goes into that statement? And how many years of experience? You make a passing comment. Just a little comment, but a comment that you've thought about. It's not just the moment that it took you to make that comment. It's an expression of years and years of your personality. And somebody else is listening and they say, yeah, sure. What do you mean, yeah, sure? Did you understand what I said? It's not shyest that you could understand what it's taken me 30 years to develop. It's not possible that you can understand it still listening with half an ear. It's not possible. How much more so when what you're saying is not just a casual remark, but it's a thought-out statement. And it's something you've been thinking about for several months. And finally, you come out with it. You say to somebody and they're not at all, yeah, it's fine. There's just an assumption when we're listening to other people that we're big mevinim, we're very, very knowledgeable, and we understand people. We're all expert psychologists, and we can understand people just sitting back and listening with half an ear, and we know what they're talking about already. What effort has to go into understanding what a man is saying, even when he says a simple thing? He can say good morning to you, and that might not be what he means. And it needs limud, it needs learning and studying to figure out what does the man really mean, what is he trying to say? How much more so when he says something a little bit more complex? And if one's reading something, if one's listening to a lecture, if one's listening to a man talking on his subject, don't listen with one ear and think you've understood. You must know that you didn't understand. It's not possible. Go and listen to a man who's telling you something about a subject which he's taken years and years to study. Whether he's a scientist or he's a doctor or he's a lawyer. Don't listen with one ear and think at the end, yeah, I understood what the man said. You didn't understand what the man said. And if you think you understood, that's when your growth stops completely. You realize that you could only have understood on the most superficial of superficial bases, then you've got to ask yourself, am I satisfied with that? Or do I need to question him to understand a little bit more deeply? And if you read a newspaper, the same applies. Don't read a little newspaper article and think you understand it. Do you really understand what goes behind it? You might choose that you don't want to understand it. You haven't got the time or the interest to understand it. Fine. But don't fool yourself into thinking that you understand it. How much more so with things such as learning, with things such as Gemara, Chumash, Tanakh, whatever it is that one's learning, don't think that you understand it when you don't, or listening to a shir or whatever it is. And certainly when it comes to one's growth in Yiddishkeit, don't think after 5, 10 or 15 years in Yiddishkeit that you know what it's all about. And that now you're involved, and now you're frum, and now you're a ben Torah. What should be happening is, like we learnt in the discussions on the Isha Halakha, it's like an onion skin. As one comes off, there's just more left underneath. The process of Yiddishkeit is discovery of how much there is still to know. That's what it is. Not a discovery of knowledge. as you grasp something, suddenly a whole new thing opens up before you. Remember, we did the formula of the relationship between the diameter of a circle to its area, that pi r squared. Not that the more you know, so you double the diameter of the circle, so the diameter of the, so this area of the circle is not doubled, much bigger. And you double it again, and much, it goes geometrically, not arithmetically. As you learn a new little thing, don't think, so now there's a little bit less to know, now I understand a little bit more. No! Now I've been able to perceive how much more there still is to understand. And if that's not the process which is going on in your mind, at least know that you're fooling yourself. At least know that you're approaching it with a totally closed mind and completely superficially. If each bit of new knowledge doesn't open new areas of research for you, that's something that one has to know. To realize that it took Avraham 45 years from the age of 3 to the age of 48 just to believe in God. How are we going to do it faster than that? I'm not even talking about reaching the stages of Tomim, reaching of the stages of Yitzhalech Lefonov, of walking before God, reaching the stages ultimately, and even then Avraham is tried with the 10 trials, of which some still have to come. We're not even talking about reaching the ultimate levels which Avraham did reach, just the level of Emunah, 45 years. And what's also important to realize is God relates to Avraham much more positively from the beginning. Although he was on a much lower level than Noach in some ways from the beginning God is already relating to him in a much much more positive way. And God in fact says in next week's Sedra, why did he do that? Why does he relate in that way to Avraham? Ki yedati, because I know him as being a man asher yetzova es bono, who will command and instruct and educate his children to go along the right way. Asks the Akedah, why does it say in the future, I know him to be a man who will instruct his children? Yitzchak was already 60 years old at the time that God said that. That was at the time of Sodom. Yitzchak was not yet born. Yishmael was already quite an old child. Why does it say that I know he's a man who will instruct his children? I know that he's a man who instructs his children or has instructed his children. Says the Akedah, what the Ribbono Shel Olam perceived in Avraham right at the very beginning, at Lech Lecha stage, was that this is a man who's on the way up. That's what's important. It's not important where you're holding. It's important at what rate you're progressing. And I think that's something that one has to appreciate, and there's an atmosphere in Johannesburg at the moment which one has to develop a lot of strength to counteract. There's no instant changes. There's no instant wisdom. And there's no instant frumkeit, number one. It takes a long, long time. And anything which you're going to achieve instantly is not going to be the real thing. If you're working on the real thing, it takes a long time. But don't think that you've only made it when you get to the end. You're making it all along the way, because what's important is the gradient of your improvement. What's important is where you're now, where you're directed towards, in what direction you're moving. Ki yedativ l'man asher yetzove, I knew him as a man who will in the future create a home which will be a home which will be the establishment of the beginning of Yiddishkeit. I was able to see that in the very early stages of Avraham Avinu. And that's what we need, that at whatever level you're holding, it's perceivable, it's perceptible in what you're doing, that you're moving up and that you're developing forward. That's the Avraham Avinu. So to answer that question at the beginning, yes, it did take Avraham Avinu a long time before he prayed to the Ribbono Shel Olam. He didn't pray to God until he believed in God. And it took him 45 years just to believe in God. Never mind the later years to develop the full understanding of the Ribbono Shel Olam's relationship to the world. What's the difference between Avraham and Noach? On the one hand, Noach had an advantage. He was born with it. Avraham had to do it all himself. But that's what makes him the first Jew. The fact that he did it all himself took him a long, long time, but he was independent. He could stand on his own two feet. He wasn't totally dependent on his environment and on his family. He could stand in an alien environment and be able to retain his spirituality despite the environment in which he finds himself. And he was able to do it because it was all his own. He made it. He developed it. He created it and he strove for it. And as long as it took, what he was left with in the end was something far more precious and something far, far greater than that which Noah had when he was born. And it was for that reason that Avraham becomes the first Jew, to understand what we're born with is only the beginning. That's not terribly important. What's important is what we do with our lives thereafter. And to understand that it's a long, long uphill slog, and it takes a long, long time. And although we might be born with some advantage, no advantage, less advantage, it makes little difference. What's important is where we're directed to and what the gradient of our improvement is. If it's evident that we're on the way up, that's what the Ribbono Shel'Olam wants from a Jew. Doesn't matter where you're holding, what's important is that you're on the way up. It doesn't matter if it takes 50 years or 90 years, however long it took. It took Avraham 45 years, God doesn't expect us to do it faster. But He wants to see the movement, and He wants to see the progress, and He wants to make sure that what we do is our own, and that it's deep, and it's clear, and that we know in fact what it is that we're doing.